Oftentimes, when we think about ROI, we think about it in the traditional sense of return on investment. Today's guest takes that in a bit of a different direction and frames ROI as ripple of impact. And when you get to know more about Amanda Slavin, that comment will make sense. Amanda is the co-founder and CEO of Catalyst Creative, a creative agency, and somebody who I have known for probably going back about 8 years now through some collaboration we did at NPR Generation Listen. She's also the author of a recent book called The Seventh Level, and we're going to spend some time digging into all of that after a brief word from our sponsor. 21st Century HR is a podcast exploring how to build better businesses through modern people practices and approaches. It's brought to you by my firm, Amplify. Amplify provides HR executive search and strategic consulting services that help companies build better organizations. From employer brand development and execution to global talent strategies, Amplify develops custom solutions that help clients from Hootsuite to SpaceX optimize their recruiting capabilities. Amplify also hosts a new community for HR leaders called the Ecosystem. The Ecosystem was designed to bring modern HR leaders around the world together to share ideas, inspiration, and support. Learn more at amplifytalent.com. Hey everyone, welcome to 21st Century HR Podcast. I'm your host, Lars Schmidt, and today I am joined by a friend and somebody that I think will be opening your mind up to new ways to think about engagement, Amanda Slavin. Amanda is the CEO and co-founder of Catalyst Creative. She's also the author of a new book called The Seventh Level, and we are going to dig into all of that. So Amanda, it's so great to have you on the show. Why don't you take a minute and just give the listeners a quick intro and background on you?
Sure. And yes, I'm so excited to be here. And, you know, we've known each other for so long. I'm excited to see what kind of comes out of this conversation because you've known me for like 7 years, even pretty much right when I started Catalyst Creative. So my background is I have a master's in curriculum and instruction. And I was a teacher and I wrote my thesis during my master's year on engagement. And I created an engagement framework to measure what engagement looked like in the classroom. And then I applied that understanding of engagement in marketing, branding, and experiential when building a hospitality company, a restaurant brand. There's about 13 of them now all over the country. And then I realized that I kind of maybe got a little bit too far from the part of me that was educating and inspiring. While I really love to bring people together and to you know, utilize marketing as a way to change behavior, I wanted to do it with a little bit more intention. And so I started my company, Catalyst Creative, 7 years ago, really using this framework that I developed during my master's year as the foundation for the organization. And so when thinking about Catalyst, I built the company with the CEO of Zappos, as well as my dear friend, Robert Fowler, and, you know, the CEO of Zappos, his name's Tony Hsieh. So with the three of us, I really wanted to utilize my understanding of engagement, of educating, of inspiring, with my understanding of experiential branding and marketing, to change the way that people thought about their responsibility in connecting with each other, whether that's their internal customer, their employee, or their external customer, their audience. And so I've been doing that, you know, through a lot of different types of services, as well as consulting and advising, using this framework to change the way, again, people think about connection over the past 7 years. And in some ways, again, obviously it's engagement, but I think about it as a little bit of a more deep definition of that, which we can certainly talk about. But I kind of use engagement and connection interchangeably, as you'll see.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things I think is so interesting about your background is your kind of lean towards community. And it'll probably be helpful for listeners to give a little more context as to how we got connected. You know, so back, again, 7 years ago, I was running recruiting innovation for NPR. And a friend of mine, Danielle Dieblerd, created this initiative within NPR called Generation Listen. And the aim of Generation Listen was to really connect NPR with younger audiences, younger listeners. And so as, you know, she was kind of incubating this new concept, you know, one of the really smart things that she did is she created this external advisory board of young entrepreneurs, founders, influencers, you know, actually everybody in that group, all of those terms applied to, and to really kind of help steer the direction of Generation Listen. And so Amanda was part of that advisory board for Generation Listen. And so I got to know her and work with her over the course of the next couple of years through that. And I was always, you know, especially early on as you were beginning to build Catalyst, you know, your lean towards community building, your ideas and insights around creating genuine connections always stood out to me. And so I know a lot of those lessons carried over into the book, which I want to dig into. But before we do that, again, coming back to kind of Catalyst origin story, how did you ultimately connect with you and your co-founder connect with Tony Hsieh when you were getting started?
Yeah. And thank you, by the way, so much. And for even seeing that, I feel like so often we don't recognize our own gifts because they come so naturally to us. So when other people recognize those gifts within you, it's, you know, such an honor. And so thank you for seeing that within me. While I was at the hospitality company, I was doing a lot of things on the side to kind of spark that version of me again, of that educator, and that person that really loves to inspire. And one of the opportunities that came up for me was producing an event called Summit Series. And this was 8 years ago. So I ended up, and Summit Series is kind of described as like a Burning Man and a TED combined. It was on a cruise ship of, you know, 1500 entrepreneurs, creatives, influencers, very similar words to what you actually used in describing Generation Listen. And that's actually where I ended up meeting Danielle Diebler and Gary Nell was at Summit Series. And it's where I also met Tony. And so I took my one vacation that year and used it instead of to, you know, go and relax, I used it to produce Summit. So while I had a full-time job, I was also producing this conference. And I met Tony, and he was in the process of, Zappos had just been acquired by Amazon, and he had taken $350 million of that deal and had bought the City Hall in downtown Vegas and was moving Zappos to the City Hall. And downtown Vegas was, you know, really impacted by the recession. And so he was revitalizing that area and really building a campus around the Zappos headquarters, more like an NYU, where you don't know where, you know, the campus begins and ends, versus like an insular model. And so I went to Vegas, long story short, again, and I always kind of tell the story, he didn't remember inviting me because he invited everyone. It was very awkward and humbling. And I kind of was like a nobody. But he is so, you know, I ended up reading his book overnight, Delivering Happiness, and he's obsessed with corporate culture and customer service. And we ended up getting to talking, and I really, you know, I was kind of, he was like, what do you want to do with your life? And who are you? And I was like, I really believe in the power of using, you know, marketing, experiential branding, you know, these kind of, I call them like these big classrooms. Like, brands have the biggest classrooms in the world. They just need the right curriculum, you know, whether that's a Twitter following or Instagram following or Facebook following, or even like physical experiences, they are connecting with people that they can educate, whether for good or for bad. And so I wanted to be able to think about, again, that connection in this different way. And I was talking to him about engagement and all the things that I was doing, you know, even within the hospitality space. And so he said, well, why don't you start this company and move to Las Vegas? And I was living in New York, and I was like, no, what? Why would I do that? Why would I live in Las Vegas? And then, you know, over the next 6 months, we kept in touch, and I was really inspired by, you know, what the potential was for that community, and for downtown Vegas as, you know, as a location and as a space, but also all of the people that, you know, not only were moving there, but also lived in Las Vegas, and kind of this like forgotten city, you know, the city that is all about transience and coming and, you know, staying for, you know, a minute and spending all your money and kind of losing yourself and then leaving. And I wanted to know what it would be like to like actually invest in a city like that. And so I moved there, started the company, and the intention was to design experiences that would connect people with the downtown Vegas community. So it's very interesting that you actually felt that from me, because that's been something, we actually called ourselves a community design firm at first, Catalyst, but then everyone thought we built neighborhoods. So we had to just change ourselves to a brand consulting firm. But community has always been this extremely important aspect of, you know, designing any type of brand experience for the companies we've worked with. And it all does start with engagement. It all does start with connection, and kind of going that extra mile to determine what it looks like to be able to build community from this authentic place.
Yeah. And I mean, what is it about community building that lights you up?
You know, I tell this story often, but it's coming up now because it's really specifically coming up now because it's so oriented around community. I have just, and I actually talk about it in the book too, that when I was 3 years old, my mom tells me that I would just line up my stuffed animals every day on the stairs and like take out a green hippo piano and sing happy birthday or sing party for friends. And she didn't really understand what I was doing, but I did it every single day. And I just was like bringing these animals together in this weird, I have no idea why I was like 3 years old. And that carried over, you know, to a story she told me when I was in first grade. And I would make sure that everyone in the entire class was included at the lunch table. And I was like facilitating snack exchange where I was like, make sure you are, you know, you give me the Dunkaroos and this guy wants the Doritos, and making sure that everyone was just felt included. I don't know. For me, I feel like, you know, feeling excluded, I think maybe it comes from this place, to me is like the most painful feeling I could ever feel, you know, and I felt that as a kid, just what it felt like to just be bullied or to be excluded. And to me, it was just, you know, I think it comes back to like a sense of survival, like your survival is not intact if you're not included. and so right. To me, it was like, I wanted to create experiences, even at a very young age, where everyone felt included, and where everyone felt like they had a voice and like they had a role, and they were like an active participant in creating that experience. So it probably came from this place without me even realizing, of just knowing what it felt like to not be in a place of community and to not feel like you were a part of something, and feeling how painful that was, and wanting to kind of build the antidote to, you know, that loneliness and isolation that comes from, you know, being kind of one in a crowd and not feeling heard or seen.
Yeah. Well, no, that's interesting. And I think what's interesting about the book as well is you're able to take a framework, something that you've been kind of, you know, developing with clients through your business, and really, I think it's really, there's an art to being, especially as an entrepreneur, to be able to kind of codify in some ways your work and your thinking and your approach and distill it in a way that is really easy to convey and articulate and get people to understand, and use that as a foundation to work with them on. And so I'm curious, like, when did you know you had to write this book? When in your mind was it like, you know, okay, it's time. I've got to get this down.
Yeah. I think it was always my secret sauce and the company's secret sauce. And we weren't really sharing it with the world. And after 6 years of doing, you know, essentially creative services, where we would be brought in to a company and they would say, like, we need a website, we need an event, we need a marketing campaign. And we would be solving these very specific problems, but I didn't actually feel that they were the problems that needed to be solving. I call it like brand acupuncture. Like, we needed to pinpoint the actual problem, but we were never given access to all of those other issues that were coming up, that were maybe causing this problem. Because as an agency, you're really kind of looked at as a vendor, where it's like, solve this thing that I want you to solve. Like, you're not in the mud with us holistically thinking about how to create solutions. And that's just not the way that I am as a person. So what would happen is, you know, over 6 years of doing this creative work, I would, you know, be getting very deeply embedded in these companies and connected to, you know, the CEOs or the executives. But again, not really having a formal way of working with those individuals. So they ended up becoming friends or, you know, just kind of colleagues, but it wasn't this formal process. And then I didn't see, you know, that all of that work and time and energy that I was putting in with those individuals actually reflecting, you know, being reflected in the work that we were doing, because it was this disconnect. You know, they were hiring us for one thing and then I was doing all this other stuff. And it was almost like the iceberg effect. Like, we were only seeing the tip of the iceberg, which was the creative work. And so after 6 years of being very tired and just kind of like going above and beyond over and over again, but not necessarily, you know, feeling like, again, it was the work was the product of that. I realized that the reason for, you know, for why I was kind of going so above and beyond, but not necessarily having a formal process, was because, you know, I was keeping this framework to myself and I wasn't teaching others how to fish. I was just like selling them fish. And for me as an educator, that's so backwards. You know, I love to teach people a different way of thinking so that they can then, you know, be an active participant in their own life. I named the company Catalyst because I want to catalyze passive consumers into active participants. I want them to take initiative within their own lives and make decisions that, you know, better who they are and the people around them, you know, better the lives of everyone around them. And so why was I continually, you know, pretty much setting up organizations in a way where we would have to continually sell them something and not change anything in the process? And so after 6 years of doing this work, I just felt this disconnect. And I really wanted to reinvent, you know, myself and the organization. And I realized that it would come down to teaching everyone about this framework and making it as accessible as possible and, you know, giving it really for free for a year. So prior to, you know, releasing the book, we did free courses with HubSpot. We did free video series, blog posts. Like, we created so much content for people to learn about the framework. And then the book came out. So by the time the book came out, yes, it's like you could purchase this book at a still very accessible cost. We have so much else that we can give people completely for free that they can apply to their business and they can change their business. So to me, that's more aligned with what I actually believe in and who I am as a person. And I felt like, you know, by default, I was offering, again, these creative services without the education piece. And that's not why I started the company in the first place. So I think it was just kind of a come to like, oh, wow, it was that catalyzing moment, if you will, where I woke up and realized I'm not doing what I set out to do. And I need to redirect.
Yeah. And that's interesting. And I think for me, there were a lot of, there's a lot of lessons in the book and the framework that I think also kind of cross over and translate to HR, especially in the context of employee engagement and you know, moving people, leveraging some of your kind of marketing and outbound concepts internally. And I want to explore that. But before we get into that, like, give me an overview of the framework. How would you kind of define, and I know that this is the difficulty of this question is asking you to kind of describe your baby in 5 minutes, but like, how would you kind of define the overall framework? Let's kind of set that up as foundational context.
Sure. Yeah. And the whole book is split up into internal customers, which are employees, and external customers, which are your audience. And it's really about thinking about them again as from step one, which is level one, disengagement, all the way to the seventh level, which is defined as literate thinking. But I'll break out the framework in a very simplified way. So there are seven distinct levels of engagement. Most people think engagement is binary, that there's engagement and disengagement. That's not correct. Disengagement is level one of the seven distinct levels. The framework works where at each level, you're assigning an action associated with that level. And then you're having questions, again, actions and goals in order to be able to have you step up to the next level. So at any given point of time within the levels, you're saying to yourself, how can I improve? How can I get better to be able to maintain and build this relationship instead of blaming others in the process? The seven levels are split into three buckets. The bottom three levels are all around attracting your customer and earning their trust. So, and I could really go through this very rapidly, but the bottom three levels are disengagement, unsystematic engagement, and frustrated engagement. I don't need to define them necessarily, but I'll tell you that disengagement's all around who are you talking to in order for them to not be avoiding or idle from the task at hand? What are you saying to them so they're not confused by the messaging? And how are you limiting distractions for them? That's one, two, and three. Once you've actually earned the trust, you can then start to build off of that relationship and interact. And in this case, the name of the bucket is engage. So, you know, engaging with them. And in that case, structure-dependent engagement is instruction-based. So how are you actually starting to ask things of them so that you can start to, again, maintain that relationship? And how are you piquing their interest? Level five, getting them excited about what they're doing, normally in an incentive-based way. So kind of carrot on a stick. And once you've gotten them to those levels, then you could start to delight them. And you could start to really, again, kind of build this relationship to create more brand loyal advocates for your organization internally and externally. And that's when you get to kind of, again, these much higher levels of engagement that we're all striving for. Level six is when you're critically engaged. You're inspiring someone to set goals to make a difference in their life, all the way to the seventh level, when your personal values and beliefs align with the message and it becomes a part of your identity. So if you think about it, where each level you're like, what is an action associated with this level? How can I have guiding questions to get me to that next level? And then what are the goals I'm going to set to be able to continue to increase engagement? You're constantly striving for the seventh level. Even if you don't necessarily get there with everyone, when you strive for that deep, meaningful connection with your employees or, again, your audience, you're going to get much further than if you don't even know where your employees are in this process and how you can connect with them more deeply.
Yeah, and I
hope that was clear.
No, that was. Yeah, and I that was good. Actually, you were under 5 minutes, so I props on being prompt. When I think about the breakdown of those levels, particularly when I think about level one, right, disengagement, I think that there is definitely a disengagement epidemic in workplaces today, and there's a variety of reasons for that. But I've seen some stats that show as high as 75% of employees are actively disengaged. And when you think about applying this framework internally, what are some things that companies can do to start kind of moving that engagement needle in the other direction and getting their disengaged employees more engaged?
Yeah. So, and in the book, we actually break out a case study we break it out per level. And then at the end of the book is the entire case study, and it's all dedicated to HR. So there's actions associated with these levels, but, and what we like to do is we like to look at an overall problem and then use the levels to help solve that problem. So I would say, what are they actually disengaged about? Would be like my first overall question. Are they disengaged because, about a specific program or initiative within the organization? Are they disengaged around, productivity? So I like to look at the problem first, again, that brand acupuncture, if you will. But let's just like overall talk about disengaged individuals. So the way that the framework works is disengagement is defined as when someone is avoiding or idle from the task at hand. And the reason why I love the framework is, the next level on systematic engagement is when someone's confused by the messaging. And the next level, frustrated engagement, is when they want to engage, but they're distracted. So really 1, 2, and 3 in this very nuanced way can be seen as someone not doing what you really want of them, which is level 4, productivity, quote unquote. So at each level, let's look at disengagement first, as you've just requested. You're going to start with, again, the definition. Someone is avoiding or idle from the task at hand. Now let's come up with an action. An action could be that employees are not responding to emails, at a timely manner. That's one action associated with this, but there could be plenty of actions associated with someone avoiding or idle from a task at hand. Then questions that would come up would be, is email the right way of corresponding with my employees? Have I asked my employees the best way of communicating with them? Maybe it's the time that you actually email them. Have I set hours with my employees, and then am I actually communicating within those hours? So am I, maintaining the integrity of the organization based on what I've been able to communicate? So it's really, again, how and also who. Am I even emailing the right person with this information? So it's this very nuanced approach to connection where you're starting to dig deep on why someone would be disengaged. And then goals. So goals would be, asking each individual employee what is the best way of communicating with them, setting those hours and that structure and recognizing and respecting that. And if you are, stepping outside of that, being able to acknowledge that on your own. So again, it's taking the ownership onto the leader. And I could do this for every single level. With unsystematic engagement, it's again, how are you communicating and how could you better communicate? With frustrated engagement, how are you limiting distractions for your employees? How are you not, asking them to do something and then asking them to do 10 million other things so they can never actually do what you really need them to do because they never know what they're doing? Mm-hmm. So at every single level, you can start to identify those actions. But at the lowest level with disengagement, it's really, again, about, are you talking to the right person? And how are you talking to them? How are you going where they need you to go? And I think so often employers blame employees and say like, well, they're disengaged, because they're lazy or they're millennials or they don't know any better or what. But this framework says, how can I improve so that I can connect with the people that really I technically work for? Because employers, I think, should work for their employees and better that relationship so that I can eventually get the best version of these individuals within the company.
Yeah. And when you think about kind of when you're researching for the book and developing that, when you look across companies that have really sound practices to support employee engagement and drive employee engagement, does anything come to mind? Like when you kind of are making recommendations of if somebody's saying, Amanda, I've got, massive disengagement in my organization. And I know that you're kind of walking through more at an individual level, but if you're kind of grouping that and say like at large, we got massive disengagement issues, what are some things that companies can do to better kind of tap into their employees and create more engagement?
So I think first and foremost, so we have this internal qualitative and quantitative research that we actually go into organizations and we assess their engagement. So what I like to first and foremost say is like, what does that even mean that your employees are disengaged? Like, how are you defining disengagement? So, you know, explain to me what it's looking like and how it's impacting your organization first and foremost. And that's what I think, you know, in terms of what you do and how you work with organizations, like that's unbelievably important, is to understand, you know, what does success look like? Why are you trying to combat this very specific problem? But it's pinpointing again, what is causing the disengagement and how are you defining disengagement? Because that's another problem with the word engagement. We all have these very different definitions and it's very generic. So I like to pinpoint first and be like, let's talk about what the actual overall problems are. Then what I do like to do is be able to not just, and I know this isn't, you know, companies want like a one word answer. They're like, you know, use Slack or like make sure that, like, magic, you know, bullet. Yeah, have ping pong tables. Like, it's just not that simple. So that is, as much as this seems way more complicated because there are these seven distinct levels and there's different, you know, goals at each level, it's actually going to improve engagement because you will create a relationship in a natural, authentic way versus trying to force something down your employees' throats that just don't make sense. Because if an employee is at level two and you're treating them like they're at level five, then they're not going to, you know, they're not going to be connecting with you in an authentic way. So first and foremost, what I would say is, you have a disengagement problem. Let's look at where your employees are. You know, what is the problem with why they're not connecting with you in the way that you want to connect with them? And also, what does that connection even look like? So first and foremost, we have all these free worksheets on our site that someone could download and they could just go through the process and they could just literally, again, it's a free training guide, free worksheet. Like, if they want to start to think about engagement and they want to start to think about combating disengagement, they need to think about it in a more nuanced way where it's not so easy to go from disengaged to being completely engaged. And that would be my first thing. And the second thing I would say is, you know, I can give an easier answer, which is, to me, this is a big problem even within our own organization. It is to create those boundaries and to help your team set those boundaries with you as a leader. And, you know, I think that is very important when it comes to engagement, because we are keeping our employees at level three frustrated engaged by creating all these distractions for them. So I think it's extremely important to teach what it looks like for individuals to be able to talk to each other and say, I am not capable of doing that. Or, you know, when do you need this by? Or is this a priority? And so we have all this language internally where just because someone's your boss and they ask you to do something and then they ask you to do something else and they ask you to do something else doesn't mean you have to do all of it at once. You know, you need to be equipped, which we don't really teach people. You need to be equipped to be able to say, you know, and create that structure for yourself on what is the most important thing and then how can I focus. And so when you're giving people tasks, don't slack them with 10 million other tasks when they are focused on what you've already set forth. So create prioritization, teach your employees how to set those boundaries, create those boundaries yourself, have a structure that allows for this open communication and dialogue, and don't necessarily, again, just think that this is probably the be-all end-all. Don't think that just because someone works for you, they have to do everything you say, because you might not even be saying the right thing. So you need to have a space and a culture where team members who are doing the actual work, and I could go all of, I'm my company runs through Holacracy. It's self-organization. And this is what Zappos does as well. And I could go deep into that. But for the sake of this very short question with this extremely long answer, one, take a nuanced approach to solving disengagement. Don't think it's so simple when it's disengagement to engagement. Two, define your actual problems on what disengagement means to you, what it looks like. Three, be able to create boundaries and a structure that allows for your employees to communicate to you effectively so that they can actually do their jobs and it's not just you kind of barking orders. And I think four, be able to set your own boundaries as a leader and recognize what are pitfalls for you at keeping your employees disengaged. Don't blame them, but look at yourself. So maybe those are four things you could do. It's still not the silver bullet, but it's closer. It's closer to an answer.
It's manageable. And more importantly, it's practical. So I think, people get smitten with the silver bullet, but those don't exist in almost all circumstances. So what, you know, I'm curious, last question for you is you think about, I know the book kind of has, you know, two applications, if you will, two audiences, you know, internal and external. What are the key similarities and differences in terms of how you interpret the seven levels across those two different audiences?
So I think so often as companies, we forget that our employees are our internal customer. Actually, they're probably the best customers we have because they are working day in and day out to help build our business. They're closest to the business. And at this point, they have so much opportunity to share what they feel about your business. So, you know, 20, 30 years ago, maybe, you know, they would talk about their, you know, to their parents or to their friends, how they didn't like your workplace, but now they're going on social media and Glassdoor and they're communicating it to others. So it's extremely important to engage them first and foremost. And I think, you know, for me, that is the distinction, is making sure that before we think, that's what I was saying to you before, I'm like, why did you decide to write a book? Before we can think about our external audience, before we can think about marketing campaigns and fun events, we have to think about how engaged is our internal audience and our internal customer. And so starting with your internal customer, I call it, instead of just ROI, return on investment, I call it ripple of impact. So kind of starting from the inside and then allowing for them to build the organization in an effective way. We have to think differently about, again, what engagement means with those individuals. And so what I would say with your internal, you know, customer, that those level six and seven are a different, it's a little bit more difficult to get there with your internal customer than your external customer. Your external customer, it's forward facing, it's marketing. You can kind of, you know, do creative campaigns and you can nurture them in a different way because you're having touch points that are a little bit farther away from, you know, from your organization. With your internal customer, they're so close to it that you really have to create opportunities for them to be able to connect with you at these deeper levels. And level six, again, is when you're inspiring someone to set goals to make a difference in their lives and in the life that, you know, they're a part of, which is your business. So that's not as simple as, you know, giving them a financial incentive or a bonus and saying like, okay, now set goals to help our company. You have to change the culture from the inside out. And so that's why I mentioned self-organization before. You know, my company operates within this self-organized way where we still have to, at level four, tell people what to do. We still instruction-based engagement, where, you know, where we have to say, do this, do that. It can't just be completely fluid. But at six, we've set up opportunities for each individual to come to the table and think about how to improve the company. And they actually, there's spaces for them to be able to say, this is what would make the company better. Not just my job better, but the company better. And that in itself is, again, it's kind of changing the DNA of the organization. It's not just assuming that people are going to get to that place because you want them to. It's you changing and doing the work so that they have the ability to be able to get there. That's a lot different than with your external audience, you know, with your customer, where you might be doing things, you know, in order to be able to help them set goals and think about things differently, think about your product differently. But when it comes to your employees, if you really, you know, want to be these organizations that I mentioned in the book, the Fortune 100 top companies, where people are saying, you know, I love Wegmans because of their sense of family, or I love Salesforce because of the way that they think about learning, or, you know, is another company, Ulta Peep, Ultimate Software, and they talk about the ultimate Ulta Peeps, that's what they call them, come together after a trauma and are really there for each other. And like that sense of culture and connection doesn't come easily. So when thinking about your internal customer, it's about how are we not just, you know, talking the talk and putting up some really cool values on our website, and then again, having some great ping pong tables and using cool tools that, you know, Fast Company said were the best for the organization. It's about how are we changing the DNA of our organization? How are we living by our personal values and beliefs? How are we living by our seventh level in order to be able to connect with others and help them get to and reach their potential? So I think it's a little bit more difficult with the internal customer, but it's extremely important. I think if not more important than thinking about your external audience.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, you want your employees to be able to connect on a deeper level with the mission and the values and why you do what they do. And then not just understand it, but really connect with it, you know, have that. And I think that's why you look at companies like, you know, mission-driven organizations. And obviously our conversation started with our, you know, my time at NPR. And, you know, when you're at a mission-driven company, people really connect with the reason why that company exists. It's a different experience. And I think it's easy, you know, you tend to see more engagement, you know, for those reasons. Amanda, it's been awesome having you on and kind of learning more about the book and the framework. If listeners want to learn more, if they want to, obviously they want to buy the book, or you mentioned there's tons of free resources they can find as well. Where can they find those?
The-seventhlevel.com, or they can go to amandaslavin.com, but those are probably, or they could find me on LinkedIn. Those are probably the best three ways of connecting.
Yeah. You're findable.
I'm findable. I'm accessible until I go on maternity leave for 3 months. I'm very accessible right now.
But, yes, yes.
You know, LinkedIn me now while you can.
Yeah, good point. You're on the clock. So yes, get those messages in. Well, exactly. Amanda, thanks so much for coming on. Congrats again on the book, and appreciate you helping us learn a little bit more about your framework.
Thank you so much. It's been awesome.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 21st Century HR. If you want to hear more episodes like this or read stories from the 21st Century HR Fast Company series, go to 21stcenturyhr.com. And if you want to make your podcast just a little more awesome, be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, or whatever podcast platform your ears desire. You'll find all the subscribe links on the website. And if you enjoy the podcast, do me a favor and share it with your peers, your network, your boss, and your CEO. Help me get the podcast into the ears of anyone who wants to know what HR and recruiting looks like when done really well. They'll thank you for it, and so will I. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next episode.